That was awesome. I was fixing to lie, but I didn't. That's awesome. I can relate. My name is Jennifer Huddleston Kelly, and I am an alcoholic. I've been kept sober since December 5th of 92, and that's my miracle. And what a fun weekend. God just showed up in a really big way, and I want to thank the committee for all of your hard work. It really did pay off. There was just so much thoughtfulness. What a gift to be a part of it, from the art and the hospitality suite to the goodies in the room to the, I want to jam with the band. That's freaking awesome. I'm an alto. I'm just saying. Deal me in. Play some Skynyrd. And I have been truly blessed, and I'm so flattered that I got to be a part of this. I've been taking notes. I do a step study with the ladies I sponsor, and they hate it when I go to these because I come back with ideas. Why she got to be stirring stuff up? But you have hit me, you found me in a really sweet spot in sobriety because I am on fire and I've fallen back in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't like to admit how that happened, but I believe if we can have spiritual awakenings, we can take some naps. And I took me a little nap. I woke up in time to hear my talk, and and then I would go back home and I would be lazy. And it's odd because I have attributed that to I met a man and fell in love and we got married and that was fun and it was way more fun than group conscience and but I was actually on a plane headed to another dude to talk about the 12th step, and I was going to have to admit that I had laid dormant for a decade and. It wasn't quite that long, but it was close. And I had just attributed it. I really hadn't looked at it real close about what had happened and how it all went down and why it happened. And I was on the plane thinking about it, and there were some events that conspired, the first of which was that some things broke down with my sponsor. And where my mistake was, I never went and talked to her. We had a long relationship, and she did something that really surprised me. I felt like she betrayed a confidence. But, of course, I assigned a motive to that, and I don't know what the motive was. I never asked. I just sort of shut down. And then because I wasn't working with a sponsor the way that I should have been, I mean, I still called her my sponsor. And I made just enough phone calls that she kind of thought I might be her sponsor, you know, but I was not letting her into the real stuff. And then when some things began to unfold with some sponsees that went south and were hostile and angry and I didn't know what to do with it, you know, I just slowly but surely kind of backed off. And I would come to these things, and let me just tell you, it's real uncomfortable to be up here and on that front row with some people you know are doing the deal like every day, 24/7, because what they're sharing starts getting, it makes you hot. Like, it starts making my ears warm, and I got to get to my room. It started to splash up on me, and because I'm going to have to tell the truth. You know, I'm going to have to tell the truth. And the truth is I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And as a result of being at these things, getting really uncomfortable, and as a result of getting real annoyed by some people who told me I was their sponsor, but they weren't doing nothing right. I don't know if you got any of these, but they're real inconvenient. And I threatened to start a step study, and they called my bluff. And because I said, wait a minute now, I got to work out the logistics of this whole deal. And I'm not a logistics girl. And one girl told two other girls, and before you knew it, I had painted myself in a corner, and I had to start a step study. And it was lame, and my motives were not good. And I knew for a fact that this was going to last about 3 weeks, and they'd fizzle out, and I'd be mad, and we'd probably all just leave AA. And instead, I showed up, and these ladies, I called it Step Study Light, because I just knew how it was all going to turn out. So we started reading the 12 and 12 at the Starbucks. I didn't even clean my house for this. But I showed up that first week, and these women had brand new 12 and 12s, and they had highlighters, and they were serious. And they took it serious, and my life began to change. They took it serious, and I got a new sponsor. They took it serious, and I fell in love with the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous through the transformation of these women that happened on Monday nights at 7:30 at Starbucks. And a part of what happened in this step study was that we began to grow together. And after we got done with the 12 and 12, the step study light, we began to go through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we came to a step, we took it together. And I'm going to start crying, it's way too early. So here's the deal with me in the 10th step. I actually started doing a daily 10th step a while back. I mean, not from the beginning, because that just seemed unreasonable. Because this step, this is a lot of work, and this is a lot of not fun for me. I have always done 1 through 9, like I really do 1 through 9, except for the money. I mean, let's don't get unreasonable. And, well, see, because I didn't really have money. That's the story I told my. I mean, I had Starbucks and cigarettes, but I didn't have, like, money, like paying back money. I had necessities money. And I had a sponsor who said, pay it back $5 at a time, but that seemed ridiculous, and I'm not real good at consistent. And so I wouldn't do that, and I cheated myself out of 7 years of freedom. I don't recommend my way. That's why there ain't no book I wrote. But I would do 1 through 9, like the direct amends, sitting down at a table and following through and creating a new relationship with my parents and my sister and coworkers and all friends. And I did that stuff. And I'd feel real warm and fuzzy after I got them amends. You keep doing what you're doing, girl. Woo! And I even had people have me do stuff. Like, I cleaned my mother's house for 2 years. I was her maid to pay back the money that I owed her, because I found out she was going to hire a maid, and I didn't have no cash, but I know how to clean stuff. And like, I cleaned her house every week. I showed up and cleaned her house until she told me the debt was paid. And that was, I got really free, and I wasn't ashamed anymore. I didn't feel like a loser. I could look her in the eye. It was some sweet stuff. But then my sponsor wanted me to do this 10th step, and she wanted me to write it down. She's real rigid. She wanted me to answer some questions in the big book and to email it to her, because she seemed to think that if I wasn't accountable, I wouldn't do it. She was right, but I didn't like her untrusting nature. And so, to borrow Sheldon's line, I would do it 1 day or 2, maybe 3, never more than 4 days in a row. And I would not like what I found, because I'm getting this warm and fuzzy feeling off of doing 1 through 9, and then I start looking at 10, and you know what? I still lie. I still steal. I mean, not the big stuff, but post-it notes and pens. And I might have clocked in at the time I was supposed to be there. And I might have rolled in 20 minutes later or so. And I might have told somebody I didn't. My phone was acting up and I didn't get that message. And I didn't like what I saw at all. And that 10th step sort of became naked in front of a mirror. And I don't know what y'all are seeing, but that ain't pretty. fluorescent lighting, it's bad. And I didn't like it. And it made me uncomfortable. And I am a liar. And the cool thing is, if I'm just talking to me, my lies sound good. And the story I start telling myself is, you know, this 10th step, it's making my character defects flare up. And I know I'm not the only one who does this, because when we talk about the 10th step in meetings, I hear people all the time, well, I don't like to complicate things. I like to keep it simple. Which means I don't really want to do this one. And I get it. I get it, because it's my story for years and years and years. One day or two, maybe three, no more than 4 days in a row, I'd write this out, and then I'd quit. I'd just quit doing it. And then I started playing this little game I call Self-Will Jenga. And Self-Will Jenga is where I just decide, I mean, I know I got to stay sober, but God's like real busy. And I know that he needs to do a lot of stuff for y'all. And I happen to have just a little bit of management experience. I was the assistant director at a daycare, so there are just a couple of areas in my life, money and romance, that I could probably take off his hands. And I just take this, ding, 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 and I just take this one little block, and I just slide that right in my pocket. And I do it real slow, like. You don't want to do this all at once, because your sponsor will start noticing. You got to go real slow and gentle. And you got to kind of see, you know, look around, see if you were driving to the crack house or anything. And nothing horrible happened to me. Nothing horrible happened. I just had this one little friend that wasn't nobody's business, and we weren't doing anything yet. And that went so well that I ding, 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 and I grabbed this other bottle and I kind of put that in my pocket, and I like to go to the casino from time to time, and you know, it ain't no big deal. I mean, I go with friends, and until I don't, and I'm not even a good gambler. Like, it's me and the chain-smoking grannies on the slot machine. I might as well just throw 20s right out the side of my car, but that's not the way my brain works. And so one by one, I start sliding these little Jenga blocks out, and nothing horrible happens. Nothing horrible happens. I'm not getting drunk. I'm still sponsoring people. I'm still going to meetings. I'm still sharing. What's a big deal? What the big deal for me was, 2 weeks before my 10th AA birthday, God, I hate telling this story. I can feel my ears getting red right now, but it matches my jacket. Okay, so 2 weeks before my 10-year birthday, I had this habit of when I would go out of town and I could drive there, I would put my most ungrateful sponsee in the car with me. And, God, I wish I was making this up. And we would talk all the way to wherever we were going, and we would sing all the way back. And when we were out of town and I was speaking, she'd find out I'm kind of a big deal. And maybe she'd start appreciating the pearls of wisdom I'm trying to drop on her. So I got asked to speak in Oklahoma City, and I put my most ungrateful sponsee in the car. Now, there's a few little details to this that may be pertinent to the story. About a year and a half before that, I got me a ticket. I don't speed. I don't run red lights. I am not a daredevil in any way. But at that time, you were supposed to have two stickers on the window of your car. They were supposed to be from the same year. I have always treated those stickers like suggestions. And I get these sticker tickets, and I kind of collect them. And during this time, I was doing a lot of rolling back and forth. I didn't happen to have a job, details. And I got one of these sticker tickets, and since I don't speed and I don't run red lights and I'm not a daredevil in any kind, I just came up with a solution. I didn't call my sponsor because I knew my sponsor. She was one of them rigid girls. She was going to say, well, you don't have a job. why don't you go sit out that ticket? And I'm pretty important. I can't be sitting in jail for 3 days. I need to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And God, y'all know where this story's going. 2 weeks before my 10-year birthday, I peel off a sticker that is out of date, throw it in the back of my car. That's my solution to an out-of-date sticker. I don't make a fake one or nothing. I'm just rolling with one sticker now, and I got a sponsee in the car, and we made it one county away. I'm playing the big shot, and I'm going to take her to this coffee shop that she's really going to like, and I see the cop, and the cop sees me, and I say, guess what's finna happen? And she said, what? And I said, I'm fixing to go to jail. And she laughed just like that. And she said, no, you're not. I said, you in a bet? And I sure did. Man, my ears are really hot right now. And so, God dang. The most embarrassing part about this is she leans over me as the second police car is pulled up, and she says, sir, we are both sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is my sponsor. And she is supposed to speak in Oklahoma City this evening, and if you will just let her go, I personally will see to it that we take care of this sticker situation. And then they put the cuffs on me, and I'm like, zip it, zip it. Anonymous. But see, I had the money to get out, and we left really early, and this was not going to be a big deal, only I kind of forgot, once you got handcuffs on, they are not working off your schedule. And I'm doing the math the whole time I'm in that holding cell going, okay, if they get me out in 15 minutes, I could totally make it. If I get out, I'm going to have to speed. All right, we're now up to 70 miles an hour. Crud. I'm going to have to run some stuff now. And I got out at 9:15. The meeting was at 8 in another state. And I didn't use my one phone call to call the AA guy. I used my one phone call to get a bail bondsman. And my sponsor, he was all upset. You're not going to believe this, but I'm not her sponsor anymore. It's funny now, but it was not funny then. And it may still not be funny to her. This is a real long story to get to a real short point. I got home, and this was back in the days of answering machines. My answering machine was full. I'm not that popular, y'all. And it was full. But when I didn't show up in Oklahoma City, this guy, who is still my buddy today, called everybody he knew in Dallas, and he knew a bunch of people. Every guy from my group got a phone call. My sponsor got a phone call. Everybody was looking for me. And I was mortified because I had already come up with this plan where I was going to tell my sponsor, my sponsee knew, and that was pretty much, I was going to make up some car problem story, and we were all just going to move on with our lives. But then when, 42 people got involved, it got a little complicated. I called my sponsor. My sponsor at the time was not a laughing, giggling kind of sponsor, and yet that woman, I think she wet her pants when I told her this stupid story. And I said, what am I supposed to do about all these phone calls? She said, call everyone. Make sure they got time and tell them the whole thing. Don't leave out the peeling off the sticker part, Tell them the whole thing. And only in AA can you screw up like that. And the guy in Oklahoma City said, that is awesome. Want you to come to the group in February and tell everybody about it. My sponsor told me I had to tell that story behind the podium until I got how funny it was. And that took a minute. To this day, that's been 15 years ago. To this day, if I run into somebody from Oklahoma City, they all go, Wait, aren't you the one? I'm the one who went to jail. And the idiots at my group, I was one of the only women at this group of AA men, and they thought they were hilarious. They had so much fun. I wouldn't even get out of my car before they go, Huddleston, what kind of bird don't fly? In case you do not know, that is a jailbird. On my 10-year cake, there was a jailbird. It was all ruined. And no matter how many times they told that joke, it got funnier every time they told it. And if people are teasing you in AA, it means they love you and they're trying to teach you Rule 62. But here's the trick. Do not leave. Do not drink. Sit in your chair and wait. If you do not drink, you do not leave, and you sit in your chair and wait, I promise you, hand on the big book, somebody's going to do something dumber than you. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, a guy got drunk, passed out in front of his sponsor's door. They couldn't get out of the house. He happened to be wearing only his drawers. I was sitting in that meeting a couple of weeks later, and I'm looking around the circle, and I'm, you know, every now and then I just get overwhelmed with grace. And it's 2 weeks after my 10th AA birthday, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the guys in the group, and I'm thinking about the things that we've gone through and how, you know, I've cried in all these meetings, and I look around, and I've seen all these guys cry at one time or another, and we've shared this intimate thing in AA, and all of a sudden it occurs to me that, left to my own devices, I probably would have gotten drunk over that stupid story. Not because my dad died, not because I lost all my stuff, not because of a big life event, not because I miscarried a baby, but over getting a ticket that I didn't pay and having consequences for that. Because my ego will conspire to separate me from you. And once I'm separated from you, I'm separated from God, no doubt in my mind. And I would have gotten drunk, left to my own devices. And suddenly the 10th step became far more important than the 10 years. And I began to do a daily inventory. And let me just tell you, I start sponsoring these women, and we get to the 10th step, and they won't do it. They won't do it. And they've all heard my jail story, and they've all heard, you know, what happens and how close we get to drinking over becoming unwilling to take a look at our behavior. All we're doing in step 10 is checking our work from the decision we made in step 3. How well am I doing this? How well am I? Which areas of my life am I inviting God into, and which ones am I not? Let's take a look at that. Let's get a game plan for tomorrow. Let's grow just a little more today and become a little more of the woman God would have me be. That's all we're doing. It's not about guilt and shame. It's about growing in understanding and effectiveness. And I couldn't get them to do it. Man, I'm dummying it down. I'm trying. You could just text me. Text me 3 things. I mean, I'm trying really hard to get somebody to do something, and they just won't do it. And I came to this one of these thingies, and we have started the step study together, and we're coming up on 10, and I don't even remember where I was. I don't remember who talked. I remember it was a young woman from a panel, and she talked about being in an accountability group for the 10th step, and she talked about how it saved her bacon. And I thought, that's what I need to do. I'm going to try this, and they're going to hate it. They are going to hate it. So I have this, I don't know if y'all got these skills, but I know how to manipulate. So I had this idea, divinely inspired, I'm certain. I called each of the ladies and I said, I just want your opinion. Now, they didn't know I was going to call them all. I just called one and acted like they were the only one that I've taken into my confidence. And I said, hey, I got this crazy idea. What if we start a private Facebook group and we share our 10 steps with each other? I just want to know what you think about this before I run it past the other girls. And because they've been taken into my confidence, they go, well, I mean, I can see you. And we begin to discuss it. And I said, you know, I'm kind of thinking, I don't want everybody sponsoring each other or any of that kind of stuff. Like, we'll really have some guidelines on what you can, how you can comment. You're allowed to say, good job, I'm praying for you, or I have experience with this. And that's it. That's all the public comments you can make. You can call people offline and talk to them about it or whatever. What do you think? Oh, well, that sounds pretty good. So I get them all to agree to it, and they don't know that I've talked to every one of them. And so we begin to do this 10th step, and I create some guidelines on how we're going to do it. And in Texas, we have Whataburger. Y'all got Whataburger? I love me some Whataburger. Mm, obviously. And it's the biscuits. Anyway, well, we call this Wada Step, and except we spell Wada a little different. W, watch. A, ask. D, discuss. A, amends. H, help. And that's straight out of what they just read. We watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And so they write about whatever they have found throughout the day. Ask, did I ask God for help? Did I ask God to remove it? Discuss, have I discussed it with anybody? Did I owe amends and did I make those amends? Or are there corrective measures that I can take? And help. How did I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone that I could help? And we began to share this stuff, and some cool stuff began to happen. They hated it at first. Everybody hates it first because it's naked in a mirror. But what begins to happen over time, they sort of started to peer pressure each other into doing it, and we stopped being so alone. We discovered we got all these common problems. And I began to share some stuff that I would not normally share with the women I sponsor, like these random thoughts. I'll just be minding my own business, and some thought will fly through my brain and go, you know, they all hate you. They're judging you as a sponsor. And I begin to share some of the things that go on in my brain, or that happen with my husband, or that happen with my mom, or that happen when I'm out of town and nobody's watching. And I began to share those things with them. And what they discover is exactly what I discovered is, if you do this enough, you begin to anticipate, ooh, I'm fixing to do something I'm going to have to write down. I'm a little shoplifter. She ain't stole nothing in a while. Because she does not like sharing that. There is a willingness that has not been present prior to this step. And the cool thing is that I'm watching each of them begin to change, and I'm watching each of them learn how to have adult conversations, and I'm watching each of them surrender some things that they were unwilling to surrender before. And I'm just going to tell you one of the fruits of my 10th step is I begin to start noticing weird stuff I do that I never noticed that I do before. My husband is, we call him Big Daddy, and he is the sweetest man. He is the most patient man on earth, he would have to be. And he has so many wonderful qualities, but talking is not one of them. And I don't know if you've noticed, I like to talk. Usually I can do enough for both of us, but occasionally I want some interaction. And here's what would happen. One night we were out and we were leaving a restaurant, and we got in the car, and I said, man, that chocolate cake was amazing. That was the best chocolate cake ever. And he said, I wish I had that recipe for that chocolate cake. That chocolate cake, dude, that was killer. I wish we had had two pieces of that chocolate cake. He said, yeah. Wasn't that the best chocolate cake you've ever had in your entire life? Man, I like that chocolate cake. And he'd say, yeah, that was a good chocolate cake. And I'd wait a minute, maybe two, and then I'd say, well, I'm sorry about the chocolate cake situation. And he'd say, what are you talking about? I said, well, obviously you hated the cake. And he'd say, I didn't hate the cake. I liked the cake. I said I liked the cake. And I'm like, well, but your tone said that you didn't want chocolate cake at all. And if you just would have said, I don't want chocolate cake, you wouldn't have ordered chocolate cake. And y'all, I start riffing on this thing, and it goes on and on and on and on. And all of a sudden, I sort of have this out-of-body experience, and I'm seeing myself with this chocolate cake situation because I'm about to get myself all in a lather, like I'm fixing to cry over the cake. And then I just bust out laughing. And I'm like, oh my God, I do that all the time. And he's like, you do. I said, that has got to be the most annoying thing. He's like, it really is. It is. You do this all the time. And we do this same thing about tone and context and tell your face and you, I mean, you get going. And I laughed so hard, like insane asylum laughing. And then I started taking a look at, why do I do that? That really is annoying. Man, I would smother me. And when I realized later on, because I really was like, I got to figure out why I do that. And we now have a name for that. That's called playing the crazy card. And what I discovered was, when I am looking for interaction and connection, and he is not giving me that, I flip out the crazy card. And he can ignore a lot of things. He cannot ignore the crazy card. He will respond to the, that is not what I said. That's not what I said. I've never said that. Well, since you think I'm stupid, I do not think you're stupid. You're one of the smartest people I know. I would never say that you're, and he gets all animated. I mean, he plays this game good. And I can get this going for an hour, you know? But the weird thing is, it starts out me knowing I'm playing the crazy card and turns into, we're getting a divorce. We are clearly not compatible. And you throw a little hormone fairy on top of that and I can lose my mind. And And so I begin to pray about this because I know I'm driving my sweet husband nuts with this crazy card deal, and it is just an automatic thing that I've been doing for years. And so I made amends to him, and we named it playing the crazy card. And I said I'm gonna work on a new way of letting you know that I'm asking for connection when I say things that don't have any real consequence and may require only a one-word answer. And so now what I will do is we'll come out of the restaurant and I'll go, man, that cheeseburger was good. And he will say, that was a good cheeseburger. And that's all he will say. And I will say, instead of flipping out the crazy card, I will say, good talk. And he will giggle because that is the signal. I'm looking for some words, Mr. Kelly. And if he's got some words, he will tell me something that happened at work, or we will talk about the next movie we want to see, or he'll tell me about the book that he's reading, or sometimes he'll just hold my hand. And that's all I'm looking for. But first I have to watch my behavior enough to figure out what I'm doing. And then I got to figure out why. It's the same thing that I began to learn in the four-step. In that second column, I look at those things that I focus on. I focus on those moments. I focus on the fact that you dumped me by email. Man, I can do years on he dumped me by email. But then in that fourth column, we forget about the what, and I get to focus on the why. Why did he dump me by email? Why am I really upset? Why am I really hurt? Really? And what did I do that created a situation in which this man can't look me in the face and go, hey, I'm done? And so I begin to continue that in the 10th step. And what happens is that I begin to develop some self-esteem because I've begun to do esteemable acts. I've begun to admit when I'm wrong. I've begun to clean up my messes as quickly as possible. I've begun to deal with the problems of the day within the day instead of postponing lying to myself. I've kind of gotten to where I do the stuff I don't want to do first. Apparently grown-ups have been doing that stuff all the time. You know, I was thinking about it somehow this weekend. Because I've been traveling a lot, I've really missed having time with my husband. And y'all, every day for 3 weeks, I have begged that man to call in sick. And every day that man has gotten up and gotten dressed and gone to work. It would not have taken him 2 days in a row for me to go, done! And I'm having to learn how to do that grown-up stuff at 51 years old. But the 10th step is the key. This is my spiritual hygiene. This is brushing your teeth and taking a shower and washing your hair. This is spiritual hygiene. And the only people who don't want to do hygiene are little kids. Why do I have to take a bath again today? Why do I have to look at myself again today? Because I need to grow. And because I need to grow up. So then we get to the 11th step. And for me, that was kind of confusing. We start with when we retire at night. Then we follow up with upon awakening. And for me, there's a lot of overlap between that and what I saw in the 10th step. And I wasn't really... And then you got the St. Francis prayer, which is so overwhelming. Like, if you could really do that, it would take up your whole day. And just, I think, the point. And I tried to complicate this, and I tried to, you know, learn some advanced Eastern tactics to clear my mind. And the 11th step seemed really out of reach because it required two things that I'm not good at still, and quiet. Fantastic. And up to this point, I was sort of used to, like, take the action, get the result. Take the action, get the result. Hit the lever, get the peanut. Hit the lever, get the peanut. And the 11th step didn't work that way for me. Still and quiet eluded me many days. And I have this spiritual arrogance that tells me I'm supposed to know what this is like before I've actually even attempted it. And when it doesn't turn out the way I think it should, when I'm not levitating and feeling one with the spirit of the universe, I want to quit. I mean, that's just how I roll. I got a long history of quitting. And my problem with this was that I would attempt to be still and quiet and to have this time with God. And these interfering thoughts would come in. And I didn't know what to do. I kept, you know, I've heard all kinds of different tools for that. You know, imagine your brain is a chalkboard and erase it. And I figure that's pretty easy for people like you. I got a lot of stuff going on here, and I can't erase that fast. I'm an ideas girl. And finally, I heard somebody talk about it, and he said, you need to pay attention to those interfering thoughts. A lot of times, they are 10th step items that you have not addressed. And they are popping up because it's the first time you've been still enough to pay attention to, I need to pay that bill. I need to do this thing. I forgot to call that lady. And so instead, I began to kind of keep a notepad, and as those interfering thoughts would come, I'd write them down, and I'd make a deal with God that if I would address those items if I could have some time alone with him. And for me, the 11th step is about developing some intimacy with my Creator. My first experience with that, and this is going to sound cuckoo, and I don't care because it's just my experience. When I was fairly new sober, I had trouble sleeping. Now, I didn't know that a lot of that was caffeine-related. that's upper-level AA. I had my first cup of coffee, literally, my very first cup of coffee at my very first meeting. That's what y'all all did. You went and got coffee. I went and got coffee. And I began to drink a pot a night, and I'm new sober, and I'm detoxing, and we're all up, and I would lay there with my brain, and it's kind of a sweet memory, because I would practice memorizing how it works. It's how I would try to put myself, God. And I would just say it over and over and over again until I could do the whole thing. And sometimes that would put me to sleep, and sometimes it wouldn't. And then I would close my eyes, and I would look. There's this light behind my eyeballs. I don't know if everybody's got that, or if that's just a me thing. But I would look at the light, and I would imagine that that was my soul. And sometimes the light would change colors. I know this sounds hippy-dippy, but it's what I would do. And when I would do that, I would focus on the light, and I would imagine that it was my soul, and it would begin to get smaller and smaller, and I would start to have a panic attack. Because I manufactured an idea that if the light disappeared, that I would die. And that sounds so nuts, but that's what I'm new. Okay, I was new and I was nuts. And I'm, you know, the light is my soul. And so I would panic, and I would get up and I would read a book, or I would watch TV, or I'd turn on the radio, or I'd do something to distract myself until eventually I would just fall asleep. Months go by and years go by, and I'm still trying to watch the light, but anytime it would begin to shrink, I would get up and freak out because I'm about to die. And I was sitting at a meeting one night, and this guy said, you know, people keep saying that God gets bigger, and I don't believe that's the truth. I believe that God is absolutely as big as he has always been. I think what happens is we become right-sized. We get smaller. And I thought about the light getting smaller. And so the next time that I was trying to get to sleep and I was focusing on the light, it began to shrink and shrink and shrink, and I stuck with it. And y'all, I didn't die. But when the light went away, you can believe me or not, but I knew I was in the presence of God. And it was a really amazing. And it doesn't happen very often for me. But once it's happened, you want that so badly. I wanted more. I wanted more. And so I began to engage in this discipline of suiting up and showing up for an intimate time with God. And sometimes it happens, and sometimes I just show up, and that's okay too. I ask God for my assignment, and sometimes I get an intuitive thought, and I know a phone call I need to make or a place I need to go, and sometimes I just go out into the world and I look for that assignment. And each day I sort of evaluate, how did I show up for God today, and how did God show up for me? And I see that. What I seek, I find. I see the ways in which, you know, I abandoned my plans for the day because I got a phone call that seemed like an errand from God. Or I went and got a pedicure with my mom right before we left because she was seeming kind of neglected. And that seemed more important than what I had on my list of things to do. And as a result of that, I feel more peace. I think I've got time to tell one more story. There's this girl that I sponsor, and she's my road dog. She's one of those fun gals. When I say, do you want to go, she doesn't just get in the car, she drives the car. She takes a day off of work, and she'll go anywhere I want to go. And she's the perfect person to go on these crazy trips with, because let me just tell you, you travel around AA, you never know what you're getting into. We have stayed in some no-tell motels. I mean, it gets crazy. And this gal just laughs at everything. She just thinks everything is hilarious. It helps me a lot. And but our very first trip together, I was not her sponsor. She had 3 months of sobriety, and I was going to a very small conference in Kansas, and they were, I called them up and said, hey, I don't think we've booked my flight yet. And they said, oh, we don't book flights. You're going to need to drive. And I said, are you sure about that? And I think they thought I was too prissy to drive. And the truth is, I drive a hoopty, y'all. And I was not sure my car could make it from Texas to Kansas. But they sort of insisted, and I felt awkward about it, but I agreed. And so I kind of tossed it out to my girlfriends and said, hey, I'm driving to Kansas. Anybody want to go? And this mutual friend of mine and Megan said, Megan's got a lot of paid time off. She needs to burn up before the end of the year. Ask her. She'll go. And Megan got thrown under the bus. And so she said yes because she felt like she couldn't say no. She did not know me well. She hopped in the car and then learned a few things about my car. And, it only has one inside door handle. So again, I'm not really a logistics kind of girl, and this car is so ugly, it will never die. I have painted it with chalkboard paint, and I put a bucket of chalk out front. It's bad. And, I mean, it's fun, but it's a terrible car. And I don't really have a spare. I have one of them plug it in the lighter kind of deal, so if you're going to get a flat, get the right kind. And off we head to Kansas, and since I'm not her sponsor at that time, we stopped at a casino, and I'm spiritual, so I gave her some money to gamble, and because we were on a mission from God, I won some money, and we put that in my pocket, and we headed on to Kansas, and we got to the conference, and there wasn't food, so after the speaker, we went out to eat. This is a long story. So we went out to eat, and that's when my car died, so we called the hotel, and we said, we need that courtesy van stacked, and they said, oh, shoot, it's Friday, she's gone. I thought, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden they said, hey, wait, there she is. She's working late on a Friday. That's weird. So they sent the courtesy van to get us, and we went to the committee and said, hey, by the way, my car is stuck at Pi 5. Could we find maybe a couple of guys, and let's see if it's the battery or the starter or whatever. And they weren't super focused on this. But I got a newcomer with me, and bless her heart, she's breathing in a bag. She thinks she's fixing to have to live in Kansas. And let me just tell you how God works, because I got a newcomer. I am not falling apart. I got to make this look good. If I had not had a newcomer with me, I probably would have been sitting in the room going, I'm going to have to live in Kansas. But I got to go, God's in charge. We got this. No, I don't know how this works up, but it's going to all work out. And meanwhile, I'm doing the math, figuring out how I can fly Megan back if we need to, and what we got to do. And eventually, somebody goes and looks at the car. It really is the starter. We take it over. I get it towed to the shop, and Megan's calling people at home, and she'd get okay, and she'd go to the meeting, and we'd talk a little bit, and then I'd see the twitch come back, and she'd call people at home, and she'd reach out to her sponsor, and she did exactly what she was supposed to do. Every other time that I've ever driven to a conference, at the end of the conference, they write me a check for the gas money. This conference, for some unknown reason, they handed me cash for the gas money. We show up at the place to get my car fixed. They get it fixed within an hour. And with the money we won at the casino and the cash that they gave me, I have exactly, freakishly, exactly the right amount in my pocket to pay for the repair. We stopped to get a Red Bull because we've been a little stressed, and I don't need gas, but I just decide to top off the car with gas, and we begin to drive home, and as we're driving home, an ice storm begins to happen. Yeah, because we're rolling deep on this deal, and I got Twitchy the Clown next to me, and I'm... God's in charge, God's in charge. And Megan calls her mom and asks her mom to pray for us. And her mom, it was a weird trip. And Megan's mom calls Megan's mom's dad. And so Grandpa calls me, literally, and says, hey, I don't know how much experience you have driving on ice. And I'm like, I live in Dallas. None. And he said, I want you to imagine that you're wearing socks, and inside your socks, underneath your feet, there are eggs. I was like, that would be weird. He said, your job is to not break the eggs. You got an egg in your sock, so you're going to be real careful when you hit the gas, and you're going to get real careful when you hit the brake. And that was absolute. Megan is mortified. I cannot believe Paw called you. Ah! But I'm totally digging this whole egg idea. I've got it. I drive a stick. This is perfect. I'm imagining the eggs. And as we're heading through this ice storm, we begin to talk about the weekend. She said, I can't tell if I had fun. And I said, I get that. Sometimes these weekends aren't, we expect them to be fun. We expect them to be vacation, but that's not necessarily what they are. They're opportunities for growth. God gets us where he needs us so we can hear what we need to hear or see what we need to see so that we can break on through to the other side. And I said, but here's what's kind of weird. This weekend has unfolded in a really strange way, because if the car had broken down at the casino, we never would have gotten there. I'm not really sure how. I guess Big Daddy would have come picked us up, but he would have been annoyed. But we didn't break down until we got there, and then we called the hotel, and it was really odd that this lady was stayed late on a Friday. How was she supposed to know that somebody was going to need that van? And she came and picked us up, and then they paid us in cash, and they paid us in cash, and I had exactly the right amount to pay for this starter that went out of my car. And then I got gas when I didn't need gas, but because I got gas when I didn't need gas, we got to drive through that ice storm without needing to exit. And we lost count of how many cars we saw in the ditch, but my car wasn't one of them. And I said, if that was one coincidence, or maybe even two, I could call it coincidences. But I kind of think that might be a God deal. And she got chills, because Megan had a little problem with God. And yet she was having a real hard time putting together the algebra on how things worked out so that we got home safe and sound and in one piece. And that's a really cool story about how that happened for her, but that's how my life works. That has happened so consistently that I have come to rely upon it. That's what 10 and 11 do for me, is they allow me this grace where I can truly believe no matter what, if I stick close to Him and perform His work well, He's going to provide what I need. He's going to provide what I need. I have 100% survival rate so far. And I promise you that's not as a result of my thinking. It is a result of your love, God's grace in this program. I'm glad to be here, and it's a good day to be folks.
I outgrew the microphone.